Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, gents.
Hey.
Hey.
What do we got? What do we got going on here? What?
Deep breath. Nothing. Mr. Murray. Okay. Mr. Murray, did you watch Doctor Who last night?
Doctor Who. I haven't seen it yet.
Watch what?
Doctor Who.
Oh, no, I haven't, yeah. I'm several seasons behind, but I've heard good things about it.
I saw the Adventures in Space Time biopic one, which was good. And the other one I am saving for tomorrow, and it looks good. How about you? Have you seen it?
I did. Watched it last night.
And was it good?
It was. I'm disappointed that I will not be seeing this in 3D, but I'm okay. It was very 3D.
3D friendly.
Friendly, thank you. Yes. You will enjoy
Excellent.
It.
Excellent.
All right then.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So we do not get to see the new Doctor, but that's okay.
Oh really?
Yeah, no, I was thinking he was popping up in this one, but I don't think he does until the Christmas episode.
Huh.
We see his eyebrows. That's all we see.
Well, that's good. That's important.
You know, that's the important thing. Right. Well, okay then.
You see his eyebrows and you see... Yeah,
I gotta get through a couple seasons of Matt Smith before I get there.
Lucky you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't been as enthused about it as the David Tennant ones.
Well, that's smart.
What?
He's my favorite. He always will be.
No. Matt Smith was serviceable, but David Tennant was better.
Oh, yeah.
No.
But...
No.
But you get your fill of both in the Doctor Who 50th.
Yeah, I got the impression that was the case. Seen a lot of pictures and stuff.
Oh,
all
my.
Right.
Okay.
So, random lawn boxing again.
Yeah.
Woohoo! Sorry.
No, wait, hear me. Silence the phone, because sure. Yeah. Hopefully my parents don't call this time. Ugh. Okay. So, are we ready?
Oh,
sure.
Alrighty. Get this going. Recording. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they're both recording again. No, I think I turned it.
You okay?
Yeah. No, I turned the other one off. I'm using the new one exclusively now. So, mute that. All right. Here we go. Wait. I need a drink. Hold on. Okay. I'm better. Here we go. And a one, and a two, and welcome to the Tales from the Lawn Box podcast. This is episode 120, Random Tales from the Lawn Box. I am Chris Mosby.
Caleb Girard.
I am Murray Fox.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is. Star, stage, and screen. Oh, I just, where that came from, it just came out. So, as it says in the, we explained the title a little bit, we haven't done this in a while, and I enjoyed it a lot more since I could actually access my lawn boxes. They're strewn all over the room here. We each found a lawn box and picked out a comic randomly. Well, semi-randomly. I got a backup in the other just in case. And I actually liked it. The backup one better, so that's what I'm going to go with. So, anyway, what's up? Who's first? Murray, it was your idea. Or do you want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
All right, okay. My first one is Dreadstar, the first series, number 9. This was published in, the cover date's March 1984. And I believe I've talked about this on the show before. I remember picking up like a whole big chunk of these Dreadstar books, and I wasn't going to read them until I got them all, and it took probably about 10 or 15 years later, and I finally got them all. I've read like half the series, but this was a started out with Epic Comics, which was an imprint that Marvel came up with to have creator-owned stuff, and the series, the first one anyway, was published by them. They did the first 26 issues. It was a bi-monthly comic created by Jim Starlin, who did the art and the writing at first anyway. And it's about a character called Vance Dreadstar, who is the last, the sole survivor of the entire Milky Way galaxy. And he ends up going to another universe and has all kinds of hijinks and shenanigans. Very good. This is
shenanigans.
Yes, yes. Basically, this galaxy, there is a war going on between the Church of Instrumentality and the what's the other thing? I forget. And the Monarchy, which is a, you know, controlled by a puppet king. In this episode, they've he's tracked down, gotten to the king. And he thinks, well, that is responsible for the death of his wife and an entire race of catmen that were engineered to be super soldiers, and ended up being peaceful. Well, he tried to, once he arrived in the empirical universe, which is what they call this, galaxy, he tried to live in peace, and it didn't work out so well because, you know, this king guy of the monarchy, he destroyed. Has, you know, killed his wife and his whole race, except for this other guy, a catman named Odie. He's a humanoid cat person. So they show up to this king, and first thing they do is they set a whole bunch of cyborgs after him, and his little journey from Milky Way galaxy to this new galaxy gave him some powers. He's got super strength and some invulnerability. Well, he's sturdy, I should say. And he can manifest this energy sword that will absorb all energy that's sent at him, and he can redirect it. So he's kind of a badass. And so now he's facing up with the head of intelligence for the Monarch, and come to find out that this guy is also from the Milky Way galaxy. So they have a big battle, because he was inadvertently tricked into helping the destruction of the Milky Way galaxy, because it was the same kind of thing. It was a war. One side said, "Well, I'd rather have the galaxy blown up than have the other side win," and that's kind of what happened. And he was made it through the destruction of the Milky Way galaxy. And this guy was another survivor that they didn't know about. So basically, he gets in this big battle, and there's all kinds of energy blasts being thrown, and you know, all this other stuff. And come to find out, the king is actually a cyborg, and the head of the intelligence network is really the one running things. And yeah, there's all kinds of fighting and all kinds of other stuff, and you, some of the other characters, you got, the cyborg sorcerer, Sigi Darklock, and you got a, let's see, what other characters? You have a, cybernetic telepath named Willow, and this was mature readers as well.
And what it made it mature reader?
I don't know, at the time it was just, I'm trying to think. Maybe it wasn't really explicitly. Well, they did more things than they did in the other. Well, for example, in one of the early issues that they picked up Willow, you know, Sigi the Darklock, the sorcerer, he could tell that, you know, she had power, Willow had power, but she had a block. So he goes into her mind and come to find out she was molested by her father.
Pretty gracious.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, that was in 83, 84. So it was a little bit higher up there. And, I mean, the price back then was $1.50. So back then, I mean, that it was bi-monthly, so I don't know. It seemed like it was a little bit more adult than some of the other stuff I remember reading from that time. It seems like it was controversial. Of course, I never read it when it was out because it was always, you know, it was probably too expensive for me at the time. But they started out in Epic Illustrated. There was two, graphic novel size things that merged together, and then they did this series. And it's really good. If you like space opera, it's a good deal. They have the first, I don't know, 10 or 15 issues, maybe not even that much. You can buy in a trade, and apparently that was back in, I was reading this, the Definitive Collection Volume 1, Part 1, they did actually, the first 12 issues, they did put that out, and then they were going to reprint Volume 2, which is the rest of it. They promised it in 2005, but it is yet to be published. But Dynamite put out some, you know, reprints of it. And this is what made me, this, and then later on, Breed made me, is what made me fall, in love with Jim Starlin's work. And his, he finally did Breed 3, and this is a neat little thing. There was a part in this book where he disappears, right? The Catman, in, somewhere in the series. And then there you see a Catman in the Breed thing, and there was a lot of, half demons, and they took on an animal aspect when they would, you know, go into their, you know, badass form. Well, at the time I didn't know it, but that was Odie. He had somehow gotten into the Breed universe. So in the recently released Breed 3, one of the characters that was helping the Breed character had recruited Dreadstar and Odie the Catman and all the other Jim Starlin creations to help fight the big bad in Breed. They call it the Elsewhere Alliance. So he got Odie Dreadstar, a character called Word, and Kid Cosmos. And they call themselves the Elsewhere Alliance. So it's pretty cool. So that crossover was pretty neat.
And when Starlin is let loose on these epic space, I think space opera is the right word for him.
Yeah.
There's hardly anyone who compares. I mean, you know, we.
Oh,
I know.
About the
recent demise of Stormwatch, and there's a reason for it. He wasn't let loose.
What I was going to say.
Yeah, he was clearly, you know, handcuffed on that series. And but you look at his, you know, any of his Captain Marvel stuff, the stuff that he has done for DC, where it's the epic stuff, the New God stuff he did during Countdown and this.
Yeah, speaking of that, I just got through seeing that they in the latest solicits that haven't come out for order yet, but the ones that they just showed, they're putting out Marvel's putting out a complete Warlock series by Jim Starlin. His whole stuff, all in one volume. And I never did get to read any of that, so I'm looking forward to that.
I wonder
That's
if that...
That's the orange dude, right?
Say what now?
That's the guy with the orange face.
Yes.
Yes. He was briefly in Guardians of the Galaxy when they redid it, not this last time, but the time before.
Oh, they had that cool series right after Infinity Gauntlet. The it was Warlock and the Infinity Crew or something.
Yes. Oh crap. I don't remember. Yeah, here it is. Comes out February. It's on Amazon already. $25.89. February 11th, 2014. Collecting Strange Tales 178 to 81. Warlock 9 through 15. Which is interesting. Where's the first eight issues? Avengers Annual, Marvel 2-in-1 Annual 2. So it's a pretty good. They call it the complete collection, but there's like eight issues of Warlock out there. Maybe that was another series and they renamed it. But anyway, so yeah, I'm gonna have to get that.
Got to be leading up to it's being put out for a reason at that time. Marvel does not release those types of collections.
No, no.
Something, and I'm sure it's the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. It's gotta, yeah. It's gonna have an impact on that in some way.
Yeah, let's see. I'm trying to find. Let's see. There's Infinity War, Infinity Crusade. They might not have it in anything. But yeah.
Oh, Warlock and the Infinity Bunch. No. Warlock
yeah, and... I can't remember what it is either. It was something, but. Let's see, some of the other stuff that Starlin's done. He was the one that was writing Batman at the time when the death of the family happened.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes. And you got, of course, the Infinity Gauntlet, the first series. The other two weren't near as good. Which I don't even think I finished the last one.
Infinity Watch.
That was it, yeah. I wanted to get into that. For some reason, I didn't. I don't remember why. Yeah, he did a real good run on Silver Surfer. Remember reading that. The Death of Captain Marvel, that's him.
Yes, that's right. He did that graphic novel, absolutely.
Yeah, that was their first graphic novel, wasn't it?
Is that right?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. What else? Yeah.
I forgot he did that.
Yeah, there's a Dreadstar Omnibus. Way back. How much is in that? I think that must be the one. Yeah, 400 pages in that one. Dynamite put it out in 2012. Yes.
If they had just let him loose on Stormwatch, they just said, you know what?
I know.
The sales in this book suck. Just, you know, do whatever you need to do. Bring the sales up. And the issues I read were just clearly... Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not. See, because he did that Mystery in Space... one that they did, he did with Shane Davis back in 2008, 2009, something around in there. It was 2007 to 2008. And that the Ron Thanagar Holy War and the actual Ron Thanagar War, that was awesome stuff. And he also did that Death of the New Gods, which I thought was great.
That's when I was talking about that was tied into the Countdown series.
Yep. And let's see, what else did he do that I really enjoyed? I'm trying to think. He wrote that Mongol Villains Month thing.
It wasn't Countdown. I'm sorry, it wasn't Countdown. It was
Final Crisis.
Final Crisis.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's okay. Where. Yeah, they killed them all in the original ones in that one, and they came back in the other.
Yeah.
So, yes. But anyway. Yeah, that's some good. The Dreadstar series is awesome. I need to finish it. He wrote a lot of good Batman stuff. When I was in Tupelo, they had this big box of Batman comics. Somebody had sold them all, and I was like buying handfuls. And I was surprised to see how many he wrote. He was involved in, you know. So anyway,
I think was he on the book around the time of the new or the. The original Jason Todd.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to say he was part of it, or he was at least.
Yeah, he was writing it at that time, if I'm not mistaken. I actually have that issue where Jason Todd was first in the Robin outfit, and I don't know where it's at right now, but I'm pretty sure he was writing it during that whole time, and. But yeah, he definitely wrote the Death in the Family issues. So.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know, they got Essentials.
And you know what? Really cool DC Comics that he wrote and drew was DC Comics Presents number 26, which was a great Superman Green Lantern story. But you know what was in that?
Yeah, that was the New Teen Titans.
That's right.
Yes, I have that.
That's right. I remember leaving it on an airplane.
Oh, no way.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. Terrible, dude.
That could have paid for your airplane ticket at one point.
In those days, maybe not so much, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad we brought that up. That's one of the reasons why when I picked this out of the box, it's like, yeah, I want to talk about that because, wow. I mean, it was so bad, and I know that's what the problem was, that he was, you know, that it was his, that happened, so.
What?
I mean, that he was being held back.
Hello?
In Stormwatch. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
I can now, yes.
Okay, yeah, in Stormwatch.
Yeah. It's a shame.
Yeah, I read 2 or 3 issues of that, and I couldn't handle it anymore. I really couldn't. It was terrible. Yeah, it was,
That series definitely took a dive. Oh, my God, he has worked for everyone. He worked for Awesome,
yeah.
Acclaim, Dark Horse, Devil's Due, Malibu, Slave Labor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he first became Batman writer in Batman number 417 through 420 was his first storyline, 10 Nights of the Beast, which introduced the KG Beast character. And then he did the miniseries Batman the Cult in 1988, which I have in trade, is awesome. And he did, yeah, storyline in Death in a Family, which was 426 to 429. Yep.
Lest we forget Cosmic Odyssey.
Oh, yeah, I got a copy of that, and it was awesome. It really was.
Yes.
He also did the cult. He also did Batman the Cult?
Yeah. Yeah, I just said that.
You did. I'm sorry. I
no, it's okay.
It's you know what? Idea. He did Batman the Cult.
I heard that.
Did he? Did he was the one on Batman the Cult, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
And then you look at his awards. You know, I'm on the wiki page. It's seen 73 Outstanding New Talent, the Shazam Award, tied with Walt Simonson. 74 nominated for the Superior Achievement by an Individual, the Shazam Award, and just all these different things. 95. Best short story for the Black Widow Daredevil thing, Arbitar. Best cover award for Breed number 6, which, yeah, that's a good cover. If you really like his work and you've never read Breed, they put them all out, all 3 series out on in trades again, Image did. I highly recommend it. Not for the kids in any way, shape, or form, but I highly recommend that series. I reread it at least once a year. I need to get the 3rd trade, now that I think about it.
He did an issue of Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes.
Did he really?
Number 239.
Get out of here.
239?
Which issue was LSH 239?
Oh, man.
I'm picturing the cover. Hang on. 232 was a Mike Grell cover. 239 is... Oh, do you know what that is? 239. Did he do the cover or did he do the whole thing? I think
I'm checking right now.
He did the cover. It's a reprint where they did the one where the Legion is Super Stalag of Space.
No.
38.
Wrong.
239. 238 is maybe the issue I'm thinking of. 239 is, I don't know.
Murder Most Foul.
Oh, yeah.
It was what?
Horse. He sets up the whole Reflecto saga.
Oh, my.
That's where Ultra Boy gets accused of murdering Anne Rand, or whatever her name was. And,
you mean and the Chameleon Reflecto Boy plays saga, detective. Saga? Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Well, because eventually, right? He goes back to Rimbor to get to the truth of her murder, and that's when he's zapped and killed and eventually comes back. Spoilers.
Shame. Yes, so Starlin worked on that. So Goodness gracious. So, from Dreadstar to Superboy and Legion of Superheroes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. A lot out there.
Agreed.
Lives in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
According to this thing on here, he's, 10... Wait, yeah, he's birthplace... No, he was born in Detroit. I take that back. My bad.
Everyone's got to be born somewhere.
Yeah, the Kid Cosmos was good, too. He did that himself. Somehow. But, yeah, there was one called, Kid Cosmos. And, no, it was called, Cosmic Odyssey or something like that. It's a kind of a Green Lantern kind of thing with this kid who's like an orphan. He gets this power of the cosmic, you know, protector or whatever, and it's pretty interesting. I liked it anyway. It was all art and stuff by him, so yeah, he's got stuff all over the place, and then his art is good too.
It's creator-owned books.
Yeah.
For him. He's
Yeah, he's still doing it. I'm one of his Facebook friends, so I see stuff every once in a while. That's where I found out he was actually doing Stormwatch, and I was so happy at the time. Yeah, no kidding. That definitely So,
that's sad.
Mm-hmm. That's sad. Yeah, unfortunately.
All right, sorry, I dragged that down.
No, that's okay. That's fine. I'm. It's sad that he's not allowed to do whatever, you know. So anyway, oh yeah, there's a thing on Comic Book Resources: the greatest Jim Starlin stories ever told. Was a nice little list of the ones we had. I haven't read that one. Thanos Quest. I've heard of it, though. All right, well. Moving along.
All right.
Who's next?
Okay. I read Secret Society of Supervillains.
Oh.
From 1978, I think.
Oh, an old one. Holy crap, dude.
No, and I can't remember if I... Well, I know the copies that I have in my hands I did not pick up off the stands, but I think at one point I might have, or they were the first issues I picked up when I found that there were back issues and stores that had back issues.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I reread the series. It's so schizophrenic.
Oh, yeah?
It bounces from... creative team to creative team, and it's a little 15-issue run, and it's every 6 issues it changes directions, and it's super tied into what's going on in DC at that particular time. Like I didn't even know they did this in the 70s, but they had like a special, like almost like an annual, except it was a special, a Secret mm-hmm. Society of Supervillains special.
Yeah. And
that breaks up the series right in the middle, and then it crosses over into Super Team Family, and like it's just, jeez, it's so intricately tied into all these little, well, not, I mean, intricately. It's like there's a story going on in Super Team, and so they tie into that, and it's just funny. It's weird the way everything is they're trying to make this tight continuity between all these books, and I don't know that it helped the series all that much, because 5 issues later it was canceled, but by the end it was totally picking up steam. It was being written by Jerry Conway, and the issues that I was reading, the villains were traveling to Earth 2, and I think...
Oh, wow. That's cool.
I was really young when I was reading these. Like, I must have been, because this is my first exposure, I think, to, like, the... Mm-hmm. They're traveling to Earth 2, but they're also... They meet up with the Earth 3 crime syndicate villains.
Holy crap. Bless you, sir.
Wow.
That hurt, I think.
That hurt somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
It's cool, though. Like, you get exposed to Earth 3, to Earth 2. Kid Flash pops up. You've got all these weird characters that are just kind of floating through the cast. It's really kind of cool. And then by the end, they finally dealt with the characters from Earth 3, and I think they put them back in some sort of prison, or they defeated them or whatever. And at the very end of the series, they promised this big crossover with the Freedom Fighters. And it ends on this big cliffhanger. You get this reveal that the big mastermind that's behind all the Freedom Fighters problems at that time is also now part of the Secret Society of Supervillains, and they're going to take on the Freedom Fighters, and it's going to be this big, big battle. And of course, both the books are canceled before any of the conclusions come out. But
interesting.
But it's so cool. Like, you have, it's really kind of amazing how it's a lot like, I don't know. Like, I think of those old comics, and I think of the teams. Like, the cast would never change, and it was always pretty static. But this book was like constantly reinventing itself. You would have like some villains for the first five or six issues, and then they'd rotate in a whole new collection, and here by the end they were, you had your regular cast of villains, which at this point was the Wizard wearing this funky orange and green costume and a big green hood. And I mean, that was my first exposure to the Wizard, so that's kind of what I figured he looked like, not realizing that originally he was just kind of like in a top hat and tails, right? Like, the, you know, a traditional sort of magician outfit, but he's kind of full-on supervillain with this big orange bodysuit and a green cloak. And anyway, so there's the Wizard, there was Blockbuster, there was a Silver, no, sorry, not Silver, the Star Sapphire. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we ever get her main story. Like, it's never told in Secret Society Supervillains, because it's not the Carol Ferris version of the character. She's some French lady, and they tease that she's got this origin coming up, but they never ever get around to telling it. And maybe they do in Green Lantern at some point after this book is done, but we never find out really who or why she's a Star Sapphire. She's in the book. You've got the Plant Master, is that what they call him? The Floronic Man, Jason Woodrue. But he's, and this is the character that, I mean, this is the way the character looks to me always when I think of him. He's like, he's a big brown wooden dude with green leafy hair and a green little, not toga, a green little, what do you call that? Bathing suit? I don't know.
Speedo?
Yeah, kind of like a green leafy speedo. I mean, that's the way I've always pictured the character. But I guess originally when he showed up in Adam, he was just a professor and I don't know. I guess they kept the Woody look for a while. Like, they kept it through whenever he showed up.
The same collection of villains. There was an issue of Justice League where they get mind swapped with a group of villains.
That Silver Age crossover that Wade did. That was what they used as the reasoning behind wiping their memories of their identities, because that's how they found out. Hello?
Yeah, like it hello.
Okay.
Yeah, it leads, yeah, they have that story. It comes up, I think, well after this book is canceled, but it's
that's years later.
It leads into Identity Crisis to a point. Well, I mean, but yeah, that storyline definitely does. Who else do they have? They have Mirror Master kind of floating around the fringes, and it's funny the villains that they pick. Like, they picked, to start off, they picked, like, there were a ton of Flash villains in this book. You had Captain Cold and Mirror Master, and Grodd played this big role for a chunk of the series, and not a whole lot of Batman villains from what I'm remembering.
No, I don't see that many.
No, like they chose some really wonky villains, which, I mean, it was cool because you got
Captain Comet.
Captain Comet was like the token hero of the book. He was the one that tried to defeat them.
The Wikipedia article that Caleb sent lists him as a member, but I guess he was
See, that's what they did in the very beginning. Like in the first couple of issues, that's how they brought him back into the DCU, I guess.
Okay.
He'd kind of been floating around.
I've read some of his early stuff.
Yeah, like in the 50s or 60s when they were kind of done with him, they just kind of left him out of there in limbo. So when they brought him back into the DCU, the villains tricked him into thinking that they were not the villains. And so he was on their side for a couple of issues, and it didn't take him long to realize that he had been manipulated. And quickly he turned on them and vowed to defeat them. And I guess eventually he does, but not in this book. Not in this book at all.
And it appears something happened at the recording. Looks like we lost the end of it. So we apologize for that. And thanks for joining us. I use the new software. And I screwed it up. Anyway. As usual, you can contact us at podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com, or you can go on the Facebook page or on the actual episodes and let us know what you think. And that is it for this week. And we're out.